Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Being it can never be a case that if someone wants to be a champion, you have to put a cocktail of potentially dangerous substances into your body.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
What does it feel like when you dive?
It feels like when you're having a good dive, just like pure zen. Like the sensation of free flowing, I guess people say, is like the closest thing to like feeling like you're in space, because there is no gravity. You are just like in a complete zen state, sinking to the bottom of the ocean, which I love. It sounds quite scary, I guess, when you say it, like, oh, I'm just sinking to the bottom of the ocean. But yeah, it's just a feeling of like complete peace, and just like, it's like addictive, like the feeling of like, and I think there's this like misperception of like freediving as being this like ultra high risk sport, which I guess, I mean, you're holding your breath in the water, so it's not like actively safe, but it's not, if done with like, the number one rule in diving is like never dive alone, so you always have someone safetying you. So it's actually very safe if done in a controlled environment where you have the right safety and you're diving with people you trust. So yeah, you are just kind of like trying to push it to the next level, like I guess you do in any sport.
Megan Lane, thanks so much for joining us here. We got very lucky with the weather.
We did, yeah. I've not actually seen blue sky all week since I've been home, so it's nice to see the sunshine again. Yeah.
And you're just home from Bali?
Yeah, I was actually in Bali for the summer training and then spent 2 months, well, 6 weeks in Cyprus, then for the World Championship. So it's been a lot of sunshine. And then, yeah, back home now for a few weeks to see the family and recalibrate.
Brilliant. And I suppose Cyprus is why we're here having the chat with you. You recently broke an Irish record.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that and about the sport of freediving itself? Like, you know, what it is, how you got into it?
Yeah. So I guess how I got into it was quite trivial. I was in Koh Tao traveling and I just wanted to hold my breath longer to swim with the fish. And I saw, you know, everyone does scuba diving. I've never actually done scuba diving. And I saw this school and I was like, I'll give that a go. My first experience was horrific. Normally in a level one course, I know now, they'll swim down with you face to face, almost like invasively, so that you feel like you're with someone and it feels safe. And also there's so many like mechanics and like chemistry with breathing. So the biggest like misconception, I guess, with the urge to breathe is that when you feel like you need to breathe, it's because you're low on oxygen and like you're like, I need oxygen. But actually your urge to breathe is completely triggered by CO2. So rising CO2 in your body is what gives you the urge to breathe. So if you were to put like one of those little oxygen things on your finger and take a breath, hold your breath, and then when you're like, oh my God, I need to breathe, if you look at that, your oxygen sats will still be 99%.
Whoa.
It's just that rising CO2 level. So nobody told me any of this information. So I was swimming down. So you swim down on a line and I got to like 3 meters and I was like, oh, I need to breathe. And I was coming up in a panic and your man was just like, you don't need to breathe. And I was like, John, that's really not helpful information. Like,
I feel like I do, John.
So like, can you give me some sort of like help? So that actual experience was horrendous. And then I got to the Philippines and I did a bit of fun diving. So like, just like going down to 8-10 meters with like shipwrecks and things like that, and like the fish, and seeing like, you see like Nemos in real life. And then it just kind of escalated. So then I did more and more courses. And then I was traveling around New Zealand last year. I think it was last year. And I was on the way back to Ireland, but I just wasn't ready yet. And I went to the school in Bali to do what they call like a master's. So it's like a month long intensive. You're training 3 days on, 1 day off. And I just fell in love with it from there and got more and more. Every time you go deeper, you're like, I want to go to 20 meters. And then you go to 20 and you're like, oh, let me go to 30. And then I actually made really good friends with the owners of the school there. And they kind of, the reason that I went back, because I was like, I miss them. I want to spend more time with them. And then, yeah, it's all just kind of snowballed quite aggressively from there.
I suppose freediving itself is, just for anyone who hasn't heard of it before, mm-hmm. Can you explain it to us?
Freediving itself, so there's two sides to freediving. There's depth freediving and pool freediving. I don't do the pool freediving because I'm just like, it's sadistic. I'm like, you have to swim up and down the pool. I can just get up at any time. It just doesn't give you that same, I don't know, it's not for me. It's very good for like training and like things like that, but that's a competitive side in itself, so pool. And then depth diving, there's four disciplines. So there's free immersion, where you pull, it's almost like a rope climb, so you pull down and up on a rope. There's no fins, which is when you swim down, so it's like a breaststroke style swimming technique. Then there's bi-fins, which is when you use the two fins to go down. And then there's monofin, which is the one I got my national record in, I wish, which is like the big mermaid style fin.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, there's four different disciplines. And you are just in depth diving. It's in a competition, whoever swims the deepest wins. It's kind of pretty basic, as there's not many rules in terms of like how you win. It's just deepest
Okay, so it's more on the depth rather than how long you hold your breath.
Yeah. It's not an open line in a competition. So the night before, you say, I'm going to do this dive to 60 meters and it's going to take me this long.
Okay.
And you tell you how long because they're safety divers. So when you're on the way back up, the safety divers will dive down and they'll meet you at about 30 meters for my depth. If you're doing 100 plus, someone with a scooter will meet you at like 40 meters. And that's to allow them to know, okay, how do we time ourselves to get down so that we meet her when she's on the way up? And that's just for safety in case anything does happen on the way up.
And what did you do in Cyprus? I know I've read it, but just for people so they...
Yeah, so my national record dive was 61 meters, which was a PB as well, dive. And I actually didn't do the dive because I've been having stomach problems. And like 2 hours before the dive, I was like lying in bed crying on FaceTime to my coaches in Bali, being like, I can't do it. And my one of my coaches is Argentinian, and she's like, fucking no bullshit. And she's like, bitch, get up. She's like, go out there. And she was like, even if you only do 10 meters, I'll be proud of you. And I was like, okay. And then that was making me cry more. And then when you cry, you get really congested.
Oh, gosh.
And then she's like, stop crying. You're not being able
to
equalize. Yeah. So I actually went out to that dive and I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to go. Nothing's going to happen. The dive's going to be a shit show. And I was then like a combination, like frustrated because the whole summer of training was based. So you have four. So in the World Championships, there's four dives. So I had on day one is no fins, which is when you have no fins. Plot twist. The second day was bifins, third day free immersion, and the last day was monofin. And that was the dive that I was going for the national record. And the whole year had been building to this dive. And then I felt so sick that I was like hysterically crying on the boat beforehand, being like, God hates me. Like, da da da. So I got in the water with like expectations like minus 10.
Do you think that's why it went so well then?
Yeah.
Because you were just like,
yeah,
fuck it, we ball.
I literally was just like, fuck it, let's go and see what happens. And then I did it and I was like, ah!
Oh my God. Do you think there's something in that mentality that you almost need to try and capture and bring with you, the case of like, I'm just gonna do it?
Yeah. No expectations is like the most important thing you can have, which is so hard to train, and I'm still trying to like find that balance of like, you obviously, people say you shouldn't have depth goals, but it's like you need a goal to work towards, but then also like being detached enough from the goal that like if it doesn't happen, there's always another dive. And it was like only my second ever competition and it was a World Championship, so it was a lot of like I said, like you're trying to calm yourself before a dive, and it's really hard when you have like hundreds, like there's like 50 people staring at you, watching you, like, and you're like, oh my, it's like quite like intimidating, and you're surrounded by like the world's top divers who are all going, like one of the a guy did a new world record of like, I can't remember what it was, 120 something meters, and like you're diving with these people and I'm like, hello, like, little old me.
Did you swim a lot back when you were a child living in Ireland? Like, do you have kind of a good relationship with the sea already?
So actually, I'm very lucky. My dad's from Mayo, so we have a holiday home down there.
Okay.
So from the age of like 7, my mum would like pack up the car before school. When we were the last day of school, she'd pack up the car, she'd collect from school, and we wouldn't go back until the day before we went back to school. So I spent a lot of the time down there surfing, throwing myself off cliffs. We had a rib, so we were able to go banana boating, water skiing, all that stuff. So I spent a lot of time in the water. I hate saying I'm quite aquatic. It's such a cringy phrase.
She's a water baby.
Yeah, I'm a mermaid. It's interesting, actually. So I dive in Bali most of the year, and the water is really warm. It's obviously like 29 degrees, the water. And it's kind of pretty steady the whole way down. In the Mediterranean, they have thermoclines. So... Oh. In Cyprus, the water temperature on the surface was like 27, and then when you got between 30 and 40, it dropped to 21.
Wow.
So that's actually a big problem for people because, like I said, like it's all about relaxation, and really the moment you tense anything, and obviously you have that thing when you get in cold water, your body goes, oh. And even though 21 degrees isn't objectively cold, it's like the shift in temperature from 27 to 21 is quite dramatic, and it didn't affect me at all. And I'm honestly convinced it's from the Irish Sea. But I'm not a swimmer. Like I was saying to you earlier, like I can't actually swim. I can swim, but I can't swim. So if you know, I can tread water and things, but I can't actually like swim. My friend actually, who I made friends with, she's one of the old world record holders, and she's told me it's quite important that I learn how to swim. So that's on the goal now for winter. I'm going to get a swimming coach and learn how to swim.
Brilliant.
But you obviously have no fear then, because most people who wouldn't be like super confident swimming, the thought of going, you know, 40 meters underwater would be terrifying.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think I probably don't have what's the word, like a fear complex. Yeah. And when I was younger, like I was always kind of like trying to keep up with the boys. So like I'd be like 10 and like the 14 year old boys would like throw themselves off the cliff in the day, and my mom would be like, don't you dare, and I'd be like, woo. So yeah, but freediving, you do get those days, like some days you'll dive down and you'll be fine, and then other days for whatever reason, even sometimes around your period where your hormones are all over the place, I can get panicky. And especially on the first dive, every time, the first dive, you're on the way down, you get to 10 meters, you're like, fuck this, I want to bail, I don't want to do this, why am I doing this? Sometimes you're down, then you do get panicky. But that's when it all comes to, like, freediving such a mental sport. It's obviously physical, but it's I would say 80% mental, and just how you control those intrusive thoughts and, like, yeah, tell them to go away rather than, like, engaging with them. So when I'm doing, I'm fine. So when I'm, like, I never get an urge to breathe. If I'm, like, my dive time for my record, for example, was about 2 minutes. I have no urge to breathe in that dive. I'm having a great time. If you try to get me to do a static where I'm holding my breath for 2 minutes in water, the whole thing is torture, because it's just you and your thoughts, and you have to get really good at just not getting your perception of time to change and everything, which I've not quite mastered.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, how long can you hold your breath for? But for you, it's more about the depth than the actual time.
Yeah, I've only ever done static breath holds for the courses. So for the different levels, you have to do, there's minimum requirement. So my longest is 3 minutes 40.
But oh my
but it's not long. The world record for women is 9 something, which is wild.
Staying still, static.
Just, yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, for me, I don't even engage with it because it's not helpful for me. I think eventually I might have to, when I get deeper and my breath holds get longer, it's probably something I should train. At the moment, I'm quite bad for picking and choosing what I train, because...
Because you can.
Yeah, yeah. But I will get a point where it's like, you can't ignore that any longer.
It's a form of meditation, mm-hmm, though, really, is it? Like, if you're trying to keep your mind that still.
Yeah. So your brain uses up, I'm making up a number here, but it's something around 30 or 35% of your oxygen reserves are from, like, your thoughts and your brain activity. So when you're going down, for the first 20, 30 meters, you're kicking quite hard to beat what's called, like, the buoyancy. So once you get to about 15 meters, your lungs are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And then after about 15, 20 meters, you then become what's called, like, negatively buoyant. So you'll then begin sinking.
Wow.
So then after about 30, 35 meters, I'll then go into what's called free fall. So at that point, you're just completely still. And that is just about quieting your mind and just really focusing on your equalization and just trying to, like, because sometimes your brain starts going, oh, 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 and you start thinking, and then the whole, you build up tension automatically. And then the tenser you get, the harder it is to equalize. And once, wow, you can't equalize anymore, you have to turn. And most people, I think, I know with my family, when they're talking about progression, like, my progression at the moment is blocked by my equalization. It's rarely, people are rarely blocked until they're super, super deep by, like, breath hold or anything like that. It's normally their ability to equalize, which normally comes back to relaxation, which is annoying because sometimes you're like, just relax. I'm like, I'm fucking trying. I'm trying my best here. And then, yeah.
How do you know once you've reached the point that you have to turn around? As in, what does it feel like for you?
So for me, it's equalization. So you know that feeling where you go,
yeah,
when you're on a plane or something, you need to pop your ears. So as you're going down, you have to keep equalizing. And the deeper you get, the less often you need to equalize, because the pressure, the relative pressure changes less and less. So you can feel the pressure building up in your ears. And if you can't equalize, I mean, you know, and sometimes, you know, you ride your ears a little bit and you wait till the pressure is very intense and then you turn, which is, like, they say not to do, but, you know, we all do it sometimes. But yeah, you do. It's the pressure building in your ears where, if you were to keep going, you'd explode your eardrum if you can't equalize.
Okay. I suppose in Ireland specifically, the public, probably our perception of freediving is maybe a little bit
skewed
by the documentary and kind of the heartbreak that we see in that.
Yeah.
Did that shake the diving community? And I mean, I know you're not based here, but I presume you know some of the diving community here as well. Did that kind of send a ripple through, or?
I think that happened a long time ago now. I think that was
2017.
So it was before I even did. I did my first freediving course a few months before that came out, actually.
Wow,
so when it came out, I had a lot of people being like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
I'm like, guys, chill, it's fine. Because especially, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding. Like, that whole documentary really shows, like, the drama and the blackouts and makes the blackouts look quite dramatic. And blackouts actually, like, in themselves aren't inherently dangerous. So all that's happening when you're blacking out, and they mostly happen in the last 10 meters, is that your oxygen levels get to a point where you're quite low on oxygen and your body goes, right, let's shut down our brain for a little bit until we have more oxygen. So as long as you're with someone and they take you to the surface on time and you recover on the surface, like, it's not a what's the word, there's no, like, long-term ramifications that we know of, there might be, but of that actually happening. The danger is if you black out and you're alone. If you black out and there's no one to save you, you're gonna die. There's actually, like, way more, like, blacking out's probably the least thing that I'm worried about.
Wow.
Diving, there's a lot more things like barotrauma, so you can have, like, what's known as, like, a lung squeeze. So if you do, if you're not adapted to the depth that you're diving, or you make any sudden movements, or you're too tense at depth, you can, like, actually really damage your lungs, and you can have, like, what's called, like, a squeeze. And it's where, like, the tissue, and you get, like, blood and stuff, and that's actually what I'm most worried about when I'm diving. I've never had any injuries, thank God. I've never had a blackout. I've never had anything. But that's actually the bigger risk. But people just think in their head, oh, blackout. And it actually does look really scary. Someone blacked out in a buoy when I was there once.
Yeah, because so one thing I wanted to ask you after watching the documentary was, have you ever blacked out? Like, is it as common?
It is common when people start pushing their limits and when people are doing, like, on the verge of, like, especially people doing 100 plus meter dives, blackouts become more common. But it's not something you strive for. And the whole point of training is you get better at kind of noticing what those limits are and, like, subtle signs of hypoxia. And so many things can, you could do a dive one day and feel amazing, and then because of sleep or dehydration or all these different things, that same dive a few days later you could be actually a bit hypoxic on the surface. Nerves, if you accidentally hyperventilate when you're doing your relaxation phase and your breathe up, you might then, like, CO2 is, like, really important for oxygen distribution. So there's this thing called the Bohr effect, whereby it's the presence of CO2 that gets the hemoglobin to release oxygen to your limbs. So actually, if you hyperventilate too much, is where you're, like, over breathing, and you purge loads of CO2, you can objectively hold your breath longer because that urge to breathe will come later, but your body can't distribute the oxygen because there's no CO2 to trigger that effect. So that can cause people to black out too. If they like, if they're really nervous and it's their first competition and they think they're relaxation breathing beforehand, but they're actually hyperventilating, then that can cause that as well. But no, I've never blacked out. And it's not really, it's funny because my limitation at the moment is my equalization. I'm nowhere, I've never even been, like, mildly hypoxic at the end of a dive. And I joke sometimes, I'm like, oh, I can't wait for the day that blacking out is my limiting factor. Because it's really frustrating when your EQ is blocking you and you're like, oh, I have so much more in me, but you can't go deeper because of that. So I'm like, one day that will be my block. And people say you're going to regret saying that because it's harder to fix your hypoxic limits than it is your EQ problems. But
how do you train now to get deeper?
Yes, well, this is where I've kind of been raw dogging it a bit, in that I do depth training. So I have coaches in Bali and I train with them, and when I'm there I'm training 3 days on, one day off, and that's just depth training. So we're doing different styles of training just to get, just like you would when you're running, you would do, like, sprint sessions and different types of training. We do different trainings in freediving. Some days you might be doing, like, what's called, like, FRC dives, which is where you passively exhale. So you exhale, like, half your air and then you go down, and that lets you simulate deeper depths at shallow depths. So you can, like, you're get used to the pressure on your chest, because when you get to 10 meters, for example, the atmospheres have changed, but you've added one atmosphere of pressure. So your lungs have actually halved at that point. And then so that's the biggest change in pressure. So if you exhale half your air before you go down at 10 meters, you're actually a quarter of your lung. So then you're really able to kind of train that adaptation. So that's really all I've been doing. There's a lot of dry training that I've been putting off, which I need to start doing, like equalization. It's all about kind of being able to, like, isolate the different muscles in your mouth. So, like, your soft palate, your tongue, your larynx, and it's boring and mundane, so I haven't touched it. But, like, that's why I'm not, I'm at the point now where I have to do it. And then just, like, things like strength building. I've lost, atrophied so much muscle over the last few months. Up until August, I had a really intense gym program alongside. And then things like swimming, you have, like, dry EQ lung stretches, like stretching your lungs on land, on, like, full lungs. There's so much and different sides of it, and some of it can be, like, not sexy and boring, and they're the bits that I've been putting off. So for the winter now, when I'm not depth training, my plan is to start doing EQ training, as much as I hate it, and then more, like, lung stretching and stuff like that. The things that you don't want to do, it's like when you're running, it's like, do your mobility and your stretching, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'll be arsed. And it's not until then you get injured or something, you're like, fuck, I should really...
Yeah, it sounds like the boring rehab bits of coming back from an injury. Like, oh, can you do 100 calf raises? No, I just want to go running.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you have to train mentally as well in order to kind of reach that calm state when you're going down?
Yes, you get better at zoning yourself out. And I guess training yourself to be like, this is me, like, I'm in diving mode. So, like, I have a bit of a, like, pre-dive routine of, like, 10 minutes before the dive, 5 minutes before the dive, that, like, I'm doing certain breath work, or I'm just, like, really getting into, I'm like, nobody fucking talk to me. Especially when you're, like, training and, like, someone's just finished the dive and they're all chatting, and you're like, please don't speak to me, please, because I also get overexcited. And then so you're really just trying to, before the dive, get your heart rate down as much and get yourself into just as much of a relaxed state. And then, yeah, just training, like, intrusive thoughts, which we all have, and it's really hard sometimes. They're there, and just training yourself to not engage with them and just be like, okay, that's an interesting thought I've just had about death while I'm swimming down. Let me just, like, and sometimes I do engage with them and I'm like, oh god, I'm panicked, and I'm like coming up and they're like, what happened? I was like, I thought I was gonna die, and they're like, okay, you weirdo. So it's just engaging. I do a lot of, like, altered states of consciousness breath work, which you would never do diving, but it lets you get into, it has the same kind of effect as moderate doses of psilocybin, like mushrooms. And that kind of breathwork has changed my life. And it really allows you to get into that zen state where you can just, and then it's like being like, okay, I can get into that zen state, and how can I get into that zen state kind of quicker without getting into that altered state?
Yeah, breathwork is something I really wanted to ask you about, because you're a breathwork facilitator as well, aren't you? Where did you do your training?
So I've done many trainings. Okay. I'm obsessed with, like, I'm like, so 2-3 years ago I was working in like corporate life in London. I was a data scientist, and I was like the least woo-woo spiritual person on the planet. I'd be like, even yoga, I was like, please, like, stop hugging trees. And then I went to Bali and I started doing, I was actually in quite a bad headspace. And I feel like if anyone's ever been in that space, sometimes you're just desperate. You're like, I'll fucking try anything. I was like throwing myself in cold water doing something. And I got to this breathwork class. And I, like I said earlier, have ADHD. I just gotten diagnosed officially, actually. I was 30. It wasn't a shock to anyone that I had ADHD. But like, there were so many facets of my life where I was struggling that I didn't know were caused by ADHD. I kind of just like, oh, I'm a bit giddy and scatty. But actually there was so much like emotional dysregulation that was coming with that. And so I'd always kind of put myself in this box of like, oh, I'm not the kind of person who can quiet their mind. Oh no, my mind's too mad. And people were like, if you tried meditation, I'd be like, good luck. Like, so I went to this breathwork class, and you lie down and you go into what's like a circular breath. And oh my God, for the first time in my life, I had like, when I say like, just blank head, complete blank head. I was like, this must be what like the monks feel like. And I got really emotional because I was like, oh my God, like this, my whole life I'd put myself in this box as I'm not someone who can do like XYZ. And it kind of blew, like, it sounds a bit ridiculous, but it kind of blew the glass ceiling off my life, because I was like, where else in my life am I telling myself I'm not the kind of person who does this, I can't do that? And I'd put myself, I think we're all so guilty of like putting ourselves in the box of like, this is who I am, I can't do this, or I'm not that kind of person.
Like, sports teams especially, I suppose, because, you know, a lot of what we do is sports, like the benefit that they could have, you see them, they'd all have a nutritionist and an S&C coach. Would you think that they should have
a
breathwork facilitator?
I'm pretty sure the Irish rugby team do a lot of breathwork now, more functional breathwork. So a lot of people aren't breathing properly. So they're breathing, like when you think to yourself, someone goes, take a deep breath, you go, but actually that's like the opposite of a deep breath. A deep breath is low and slow, and it's into your belly, into your diaphragm, and then expanding your intercostal muscles. A lot of people, because we're constantly slumped over desks and stuff, everyone are breathing into their chest, which is like, if you're not breathing into the deep lobes of your lungs, you're not getting the best oxygen exchange. So yeah, just teaching people how to breathe, but also teaching people, I think, especially Irish people, and I was one of them, we're quite like, ah, oh, Jesus, that's all for we were. My dad even now is like, ah, oh, what the fuck are you playing at? Like, he's like, I'm glad you're enjoying it, but like, get away from me. Like, and I think
so Irish.
Yeah, something I really like, and so many people have said it to me before, they're quite shocked when they find out that I'm really into all that shit, because they're like, God, you don't really strike me as someone who would be into that spiritual crystal shite. But I kind of like that, because I'm like, there's a huge demographic that I want to reach, and I'm still figuring out what that is, of people who are, they want to learn how to breathe better and get out of their heads, but they're not ready for that kind of full spiritual awakening side of things.
Will you base yourself in Dublin now for a while, or are you going back to Bali soon?
I am supposed to go to Egypt now in a few weeks. I'll be home for Christmas. So the plan is to go to Egypt for a few weeks in November and then be back for Christmas, and then I'll head off to Bali then in the new year to start base training.
And what is next for you, I suppose? Like, obviously you have to get back to training, sort the equalization stuff out, but then what's your kind of, I suppose, what's your goal in the next coming
my years, goal for months? Next year, what's the goal, full stop? I think I can do it next year, is to be the deepest Irish person ever. Which is currently 81 meters, which I think I can do next year if I sort my if I take my equalization seriously. But yeah, that's the next goal, is to be the deepest Irish person ever.
Is there a competition next year that you would aim to become the, what did you say, the deepest Irish person
ever? Yeah,
that's such a cool line.
Yeah. Like, that's a good tagline for my Instagram.
Is there like a time frame at all that you have on that, or again,
I haven't
pressure.
Told my coach about that plan yet, so we'll see what she says when I tell
her. She knows
now. Hi Julia. But I would say the World Championship next year. So there's two big competitions I'm going to do next year. There's the Asian Freediving Cup, which is the biggest competition in Asia, which is like end of May. And then the World Championships again will be like end of September. So I guess my plan, again, when I talk to my coach and she slaps me across the face, is like to have like a mini peak up to that competition in May, and then come down and then peak again for that competition and like become the deepest Irish person ever. I didn't say that with much conviction, did I?
No, you're convincing
me. We'll work on that.
Right, guys. Woo! National record.
Irish national record. Whoop, whoop.